Today, the 25th. Okay.
Can't believe it is on the
schedule. Seriously.
I feel like we've been saying that for 2 years.
Well, right? It's funny because after one positive side effect of the pandemic was that our 10-month-old at the time, till he was two, wasn't sick for 2 years, and neither were we. And then this month, all three of us got the rotavirus.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, oh, yeah, there's other things that can get you sick, too, isn't there?
Oh, boy. Well, let me just set the stage real quick.
Sure.
I'm going to put these headphones on just so I can make sure I'm actually hearing everything correctly for the recording. So it is May 25th. Just after 4 p.m., we're at Chapel Hill Public Library. I'm Molly Luby, and I'm interviewing, you want to say your name?
Joe Patrizzi.
And do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. Just what I do and stuff like that, yeah.
Whatever you want, however you want history to remember you.
Okay, okay. that's a lot to think about. But I guess... I'm a graduated from UNC in 2013. During the pandemic, as of March of 2020, was working at the General Alumni Association for UNC, the UNC Chapel Hill General Alumni Association. Married to my wonderful wife, Megan. We had at the beginning of the pandemic, we had a 10-month-old named Patrick. Who at just turned three last week.
Wow.
So, that was kind of where I was during the pandemic, or at the onset, so.
Yeah, and you were telling just before I stopped you to fill out a little bit of paperwork,
yeah.
You were sharing some really interesting work that you've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
At UNC.
Yeah. When the pandemic started and no one knew how long it was going to last, what the repercussions were going to be for everybody and everything, the work, I think like a lot of people's jobs, we kind of didn't do much. And when you're an alumni association and basically a lot of what you do are organizing events, and excuses for alumni to get together and see each other and have fun. And that was not something that we were doing, And so there was a lot of quiet months, but I remember at some point in July or August of 2020, we had heard of one of our favorite restaurants downtown closing. Mm-hmm. And we got to that point in the pandemic where we realized that businesses were going to be hurt by this, businesses that we loved. And I thought, man, I wish there was something that I could do to help those businesses. And I had only gotten back to my alma mater to work in November of 2019. So I remember thinking, wait a second, Joe, you are at the UNC Alumni Association now. All the people that went to Carolina like you that love these same businesses are here. So maybe there is something you can do. And so what we hit upon was this idea of, I'm a history guy. I have my UNC Chapel Hill undergrad and degree in history, which was studying UNC and Chapel Hill history. Mm-hmm. And then as of 2020, I had just finished my second year of graduate school, earning my degree in history again studying UNC and Chapel Hill history. And so what I wanted to do was get current business owners who might have been hurting at the time introduced to our alumni who love those businesses, and also kind of go for the nostalgia thing, which of course alumni associations always do, and talk about, remember when we used to, after being out at on Franklin Street when we were students and it was 2 a.m. and we went to Hector's on Franklin Street. Remember that? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, remember when we used to buy our clothes, our suits for our big interviews at Julian's before we when we were seniors and stuff like that? And so what we did, a series of six events, one with each topic for each. So we did shops, arts and music, Black-owned businesses. We split up restaurants as quick bites and coffee shops, and then restaurants, like more of your sit-down places, and then bars. And we had a host for each one, and we would invite as many of the current business owners in those areas, and we'd have them come and talk about how what the pandemic was like. And then we also just had this, I think we had over 200 slides of current and previous businesses in those areas. So if someone were to say, you know, Top of the Hill now, of course, is right at the corner of Columbia and Franklin Street. And if someone were to say, you know, when I was in college, that used to be called the Happy Store, and it was a gas station, and it's also where we bought our beer, we could pull up a picture of the Happy Store and be like, oh, yeah, that's what it used to look like, you know. And so, and then at the end, we took $5 donations for that, that would, and then any additional donations people wanted to do, and that went to the Experience Downtown Chapel Hill Partnership to help, you know, at the time it was things like or outdoor seating, the money would go towards that, or signs for, you know, please wear your mask, or whatever to help as we got to that period by the end of it, because we did one a month, where things were feeling a little more open. People were still cautious, but it was like, I feel safe now to at least, I want to help support these businesses. Mm-hmm. And then for those alumni who were further away, who couldn't come because this was all over Zoom, we encourage them, buy gift cards now and come spend it when you come back. Or do your holiday shopping at Johnny T-shirt online or what have you. And so, you know, I wouldn't go so far as to say that we like saved the day for any of these businesses, but it was cool at least to help a little bit. Yeah. And for the business owners, I hope to see, hey, here's someone that graduated in 2013, someone that graduated in 1968, and we are here because we both went to Sutton's when we were in college, you know, and we're thinking about you guys, and we hope you're doing okay. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of fun conversation that went on with that, and it was honestly, for a hard time for everybody, it was one of the things that I had to look forward to and be excited about, and just like something to do to distract us from all the craziness. So, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was fun.
That sounds really great. So I have down that we're doing the short interview.
Okay.
And so those are those questions. Yeah. No, that's okay. We'll go through because we like to start with like top of mind things.
Yeah.
If there are any questions from the longer that you want to answer, that's cool. This is for you though.
Okay.
I have no agenda on this. Okay. So anything that you want to talk about, even if it's not on these questions, if you have thoughts that you wanted to share, you are, in a way, you really are speaking to the future.
Okay.
I will share like one of the things that I've been thinking about is that we had been looking for stories from the 1918 pandemic in Chapel Hill specifically, and thinking about, well, what are the things that we are most interested in hearing? And it really wasn't necessarily about sickness.
Right.
It was about life.
Yeah.
Like, what was life like?
Yeah.
So that would be the only thing that I would share, that I think if we go forward 100 years, what are people going to be interested in?
Yeah.
So, but in truly, this is for you to share what you think would be interesting. Yeah. Is it helpful for you if I ask you questions and you answer them, or how do you want to do it?
I think there's, in terms of just like what the experience was, the big thing for us, like I said, I had been apart from the Chapel Hill community for a while. I graduated in 2013. My parents met at Carolina. I'd always wanted to be a part of this community, not just the school, but the town. I think I was... My parents always fostered a love for the town and the school, and not just a place to go and get your degree, but a place that a community beyond the college that is so great to be a part of. Mm-hmm. And so, but I worked in admissions for 2 years after I graduated. The job I ended up taking was at an Elon admissions, and Elon was awesome, but I was gone for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And I finally, what the goal was always to come back. Mm-hmm. And I got back in November 2019 and was so thrilled, you know, and I was going to take it for all it's worth, never take it for granted again, that I could just walk to Franklin Street for lunch whenever I wanted to, you know, or just do anything in Chapel Hill just for the heck of it because I was there again, you know. Mm-hmm. And then obviously 4 months in, this happens and we're at home all the time and everything. And in turn, I see the question about the mental, emotional, and physical health. Uh-huh. It was tough because we had a 10-month-old. Yeah. My wife was a teacher. I was just talking about how wonderful the GAA honestly was at the time, because we were encouraged to do stuff if we had ideas like what I just described. Mm-hmm. But if we didn't, then it was like, okay, let's do this. Make sure you're doing your stuff. But like, we were encouraged not to push ourselves, and don't feel like you have to hit huge benchmarks or whatever, because this is a crazy time. But my wife was a fourth grade teacher, and I hope you're going to interview some teachers as well. I'm sure you will, because I shouldn't speak to that secondhand experience. But she went through a lot, and on top of all of that, I was also in grad school. So in the course of a day, I was an employee, a graduate student, and a father, and a husband. And that was stressful enough, like March through the summer of 2020. But then when the school year started again, it was like, there was my wife teaches in Orange County, and there was less patience for some people of, we're not gonna send the kids to school or what have you, even if it's the safest thing. And so by November, she was going to the school building again. So then from November through June of 2021, she would leave for school every day. And so I was at home by myself with our toddler and working and trying to complete my graduate degree. And that was tough. And I look back now and I think, how did I do that, you know, because now he's back in daycare and, you know, I'm back to work 3 days a week and everything. But it was so on the one hand, that was all the tough stuff. Trying to fit all that stuff into one day was tough, and trying to wake up a couple hours before him so I could get some work done so then I could at least attend my virtual meetings while my son ran around. Mm-hmm. And then get to nap time, have lunch, and then try and rush to get enough work done so I could start on my schoolwork, so that hopefully my wife would be home before he woke up and I could finish my schoolwork for that evening. And but then obviously, you know, the flip side was where, so my wife is due again July 19th with our second son. And for this second one, I won't get to spend as much time with him as I did. So it was, I look back on that time and I'm of two minds about it. On the one hand, I was exhausted all the time. So was my wife. So I'm not trying to make it sound like I was in the tough spot. Mm-hmm. We were exhausted. He felt cooped up. Our son was cooped up in the house, and that part of it was tough. But on the other hand, I got to spend so much time with him, and I always had it as my goal to like not be the dad that just like showed up after work and like played for a couple hours and then it was bedtime, you know? And I got to like all the things that maybe dads let our wives take on too much of sometimes, the laundry and dinner and the dishes on top of taking care of the child. I had to be on top of those things, and it felt, I was proud to be on top of those things. And I think, and so the goal since then has to not let that go and not let it then just pass away from me again, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's tough when I think about it. It's like there's, in a weird way, there's elements that I miss of it, because I saw my family more than I do now, even though, you know, hopefully we're in a safer world now. Mm-hmm. But I, at the time, I was got to see them more. So I think that's some of the takeaways of the pandemic for me are like the existential fear mm-hmm. is not something that I miss mm-hmm. and won't, once we're, if we ever get to a point where we're really not worried about COVID anymore, I won't miss that part of it. But then there's that part of getting to spend so much time together as a family and having my job at least be understanding of that is something I will miss the rest of my life probably, you know? So that was the long and short of that. In terms of specific to Chapel Hill, because I know that's what we're really talking about. We live in Mebane.
Oh, okay.
But we're here all the time. We are, you know. And I don't want to stereotype or what have you, but the one thing about Chapel Hill was that we felt more comfortable here mm-hmm. than when we would go west of Mebane. And what I mean by that is we would try to support. Every Saturday night, we did take out dinner because we wanted to support a restaurant once a month or once a week. Mm-hmm. And we got to the point where we would only come to Chapel Hill or Durham because we always felt when we would come here that everyone we interacted with was cool with wearing a mask. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of this feeling. It got to the point, I think you and I still feel this way. That wearing a mask, if someone around me is wearing a mask, that signifies to me that they care about my health. Because how many times did we hear that? The mask doesn't protect you as much as it protects the other people around you. And when I came to Chapel Hill, I generally felt like that's the way it was. And it felt like an effort that, you know, and this is just my take, but it felt like Chapel Hill. I will for the rest of my life think of Chapel Hill for all the people who were trying to help each other out, mm-hmm. just to stay healthy, not to stay in business even, but just to stay healthy. Mm-hmm. And it was, I've always been, any time when I've had when I've been a part of the Chapel Hill community, I've been thankful. But the people who I felt like cared, especially if I had my 1-year-old, then 2-year-old with me, who were willing to wear a mask, it was like, thank you. Because even now, he can't get vaccinated yet. So when people are cool with me wearing a mask and wear a mask around me, they know me, it's like they're saying, yeah, we don't want you to take this home to your son. And I will remember Chapel Hill for the rest of my life during this time as thinking about other people in that way. Yeah. And I appreciate that a lot.
Yeah, that's great. Is there anything you wish you had done differently earlier in the pandemic?
I don't know, not right off the top of my head, because we were so overcautious. Okay. Yeah. We were doing a grocery pickup instead of going to the store once every 2 weeks and wiping down all of the, you know, this was before we knew it was airborne, and it felt like I would be reading my book for grad school and someone would walk on at the sidewalk all the way at the end of our driveway and my blood pressure would go up. Now we're in a place where we know that that's okay. They're not going to get you sick, but we were so overly cautious. So in terms of not getting sick, we started at a very high level and then worked and have slowly, you know, the fact that like I'm here right now obviously is like slowly wheeled it back a little bit. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would have done anything differently, but I think about how differently I thought about this disease and how the people in Chapel Hill and then North Carolina and then the country and then the world would deal with it. Mm-hmm. Because it felt like a moment that should have been, we are being told what will fix this. And how we can prevent this. And I think I was unfortunately naive enough. I wish I didn't feel I was naive at the time. But looking back, it's like I thought people were going to, the whole world was going to be like, all right, guys, we're being asked to stay home for 2 weeks. And if we really did that for the people who were fortunate enough to be able to, which I understand not everyone was able to, but if for the people who are fortunate enough to be able to work from home, can stay home and not see extended family and stuff, if we do that for a couple weeks, we'll be in a much better spot. And how much that just didn't happen. And my dad is a family doctor. He did his medical residency at UNC. My mom's a pharmacist. She went through UNC for both degrees. And so I was brought up that to see how hard it is to become a medical professional. Mm-hmm. And that's why I trust medical professionals, and to see the amount of people that didn't. Mm-hmm. I guess I wouldn't go back and change that I would be more cynical. Mm-hmm. But if something like this were to happen again, unfortunately, I would be. Mm. So
yeah, so you've become more cynical.
Yeah. And again, in the greater world, you know, most of our family and friends and people I, you know, work with and stuff, I've realized how many good people are in my immediate vicinity. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the thing, and maybe I'm just being overdramatic, but in terms of the 7 billion people on earth that have just, how quickly some people just decide, forget it, I don't care about your 2-year-old. Mm-hmm. I need to eat at my pizza place every Friday night. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Sure. yeah, I hear you loud and clear. Absolutely. Is there anything that your family did for fun, or you did by yourself for fun during the pandemic?
Well, it was really cool to every day see my son become a little person every day, you know, because I can remember at the beginning, we were able to, with the position of our couch and then putting a couple of toy bins in between the spaces in between our couches and the wall, uh-huh. we could kind of corral him in this little square for the day. Uh-huh. And I could sit on my computer at the dining room table and know that he would stay there. Uh-huh. And I can remember the first day he climbed over the basket of toys. It was like, okay, well, now the whole house. And then he started climbing the stairs. And then, and so like, well, now the whole house is his. But just lit. Really having so much time in the day, because I think what a lot of us realize is like we have jobs that require us to be in a physical location for 8 hours a day, but very few jobs require you to be accomplishing task of your job for 8 hours a day. So when I was able to get up early and stuff, and then I was able to be with him during the day when babies are happy instead of in the, you know, bewitching hour, and see it. And that was just the most fun in the world. And then my wife and I, you know, for 2 years up to then, when I'd started grad school, I would go to work. Some days I would leave work to go to class, then come home, eat dinner, and then go back to homework after bedtime for our son. Mm-hmm. And my wife was incredibly accommodating in that way. Mm-hmm. But one of the fun things, and I don't want to say the fun things about the pandemic, but the way we found fun in the pandemic was that we were able to, I was able to, because she could watch our son, and I didn't at least have an hour and a half in the car that I usually have. You can get a lot of homework done in an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. So we largely were able to put him down for bed, and I'd already be done with my homework for the day and work for the day. And so for the first time in 2 years, because of the pandemic, even though I had homework, we were able to just talk before bed or watch a movie or watch TV. And then the fact that we didn't have to get up to commute, we could sleep. And the saving grace of this entire thing was that our son was an insane sleeper. Uh-huh. And if you allow him to, he will often sleep till 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning. And so we could go to bed at midnight or even 12:30 on a Tuesday night because the movie we were watching was good and still get plenty of sleep, you know? Yeah. And they're just like insane, and, you know, because now we're back to going to bed at 10 o'clock because we got to get up and get him going and everything.
Yeah.
And so we just had this more time of nothing. You know, I can specifically remember this one time putting him down for bed. It was June by this point, so the days were long. He was going to bed around 7 o'clock, and it was still light outside, and we had had dinner. I'd done all my homework for the day, and I was done with school, and I was like, wow, it's 7 o'clock, and we have like 5 hours to just do whatever we want to do. Well, I didn't even have that before the pandemic, and it was like this realization that in some ways the pandemic opened things up for at least the time that you had, you know? So that was kind of just the freedom, the time that we had to be around each other was the fun that we did. You know, there was a lot of things that we typically would do for fun that we didn't get to. The other thing my wife probably loved is that sports shut down for a while. So what we were watching on TV was, you know, the TV and movies we wanted to watch instead of me wanting to watch a baseball game or whatever. And it's funny because now that we're there, I still watch every Carolina football game, every Carolina basketball game. But outside of those two, there's often times where, oh, the Yankees are my baseball team. They're on Sunday Night Baseball tonight. But you know what? I'd rather watch something that my wife and I both enjoy or do something else besides TV. When I would have been before, in the before times, it was just, well, the Yankees are on, I'm going to watch them. It was like assumed. So, and you know, and I think, I hope I'm not the only person that had this experience, but my wife and I were in a great place before the pandemic. But I think we got to an even better place because of it, because of the time we got with each other, but also because of what was thrust upon us, you know? And it was like it was a test of like, if we were good before, this is going to make sure that we're good. We can either fail this test or not, or we can pass it. And because we passed it, now we look at what challenges might we have in the future. And I don't want to jinx anything, but what could come that will be harder than what we went through, you know? And we did this together. Yeah. So
that's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. I guess that sort of gets to the last question.
Yeah.
What do you hope we keep from the pandemic?
Yeah. I hope, and I think that the Chapel Hill community, it felt like more, it felt like a good percentage of the group here, of the community, did come together to, in a way, protect each other. You know, we don't think of like protecting the community as staying home, you know, or wearing a mask. But when I think this community, when it was told that's how we can protect each other, we did. And I hope that into the future, it doesn't take a pandemic for us to see each other as a part of the same community, that we can help do other things for the greater good and help other people. So I hope we keep that. Before the pandemic, I was at work 8 to 5 Monday through Friday, and then some weekends here and there. and my job now, and at the GAA as of, you know, May 2022, is we get to work from home 2 days a week. And that allows us more sleep, more family time, because I can be home. My wife, since my wife teaches, she has to be in earlier, but she's done well before five. So my family of three, soon to be four, can be together around 3:30 or 4 o'clock at home already, you know, and we can do some stuff before dinner instead of rushing home before work just to eat together and then start the bedtime routine, you know. Mm-hmm. So I hope we all think more of, you know, the term work-life balance was certainly something that we talked about before the pandemic, but the pandemic forced us into this to prove to people what we're able to accomplish from home. And I hope that as in general, people realize that makes people happier and we can accomplish just as much and people will stay longer. I certainly, my big hope is that my generation, I'm 31 today.
Oh, happy birthday.
Sorry. It was in January, but as of today, I am 31.
I got you.
Thank you, though. I appreciate it. As of today, I'm 31, and I hope that when my generation become the people that are making the decisions on what work-life balance looks like, that we take this experience into how we should treat employees and people and how our jobs can be something that we get to do and enjoy. Hopefully, if you get to do a job that you enjoy, but that's not all we're good for. We should also be good for our communities and our families. And I hope that's the biggest positive is that I hope we take is that our jobs can be, we can do good work, but be with our family. Our family can be our higher priority. Mm-hmm. And that's something that the parents and families of today kind of expect to keep that what we got out of this, you know. And then I hope that the next time we have a public health crisis, we listen to the people who are already preparing us for the next public health crisis. And we believe the people who have the brains to probably go and make tons of money in other fields, but choose public health, that we choose to listen to the people that dedicate their life to our health. We choose to listen to them when they tell us how we can keep each other healthy. And just thinking a little bit more about what's good for everyone around me instead of just what's the impulse tell me I want to do today. I think we've seen so many examples of the folks who are not that way, mm-hmm. that I think sometimes we forget that I think a lot of us are more in tune with how we can help our fellow person with easy steps like wearing a mask. Mm-hmm. And I hope that wins the day, even if it doesn't get the headlines,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
so. Yeah.
That's great. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about or share? One of the questions here is staying in touch with loved ones far away. I don't know if you had a lot of Zoom.
Yeah. I have a twin brother.
Oh, wow.
And a younger sister and my two parents. And in the middle of my niece was born in May of 2020, so I didn't get to meet her until she was a month old. And my wife has her parents and sister as well. And that's one thought I definitely have. You were talking about how y'all were looking at the last pandemic. Mm-hmm. I am very thankful that this is the pandemic that I was around to live through, because in 1918, we didn't have Zoom. We didn't have Netflix and we didn't have the internet. We didn't have ebooks. We did, you know, like if we were in 1918 and you and I had read all the books in the house, then what else were we going to do next? You know, as opposed to now where, okay, I read all the books in the house. Now I can go buy another book and I don't have to leave the house to go do it. But yeah, we kept in touch with loved ones, and we kind of, you know, as time went on, like I think a lot of us did, our bubble expanded to just the for and our parents. It was like our siblings and our parents, and then that was kind of the bubble. So that, because there was, I'll always remember how it, you always felt like, okay, if you and I agree to be in a room together, but you don't know who I've been with. Right. So if I've been hanging out with 100 other people, and if any one of those people was sick, then I could get you sick. Yeah. So what we really tried to impress my brother and his wife, and then my wife and I as the ones with little ones, what we really tried to impress on people is, okay, grandma and grandpa and sisters, we don't want to go through all of this without you. We want to be able to see you, but please make us the only people that you do it. And they did, and we didn't, you know, get sick. My as of January of 2022, my brother and sister-in-law got the Omicron, and that was at the time where it kind of felt like even once you've gotten vaccinated and everything, you can still get it. Mm-hmm. And so they got it then, but they'd done everything that they should have done to that point, so it was mild, you know. But yeah, so eventually, it wasn't until August after March, it started in March, where we finally were like, let's open that bubble a little bit more, you know, to just the extended family. So, but once we did that, that it was like a huge weight lifted off of our, just to have my mom say, Megan and Joe, you guys sleep. I will get Patrick out of his crib tomorrow.
Yeah.
After having 5 months of nothing like that, you know, I think my wife and I slept till almost noon that day, you know. I think it's not just my nuclear family of three that got closer. The grandparents and my parents and her parents understood how much we needed them at that point, and they were there. And so I think we'll be in a good place moving forward because of that too. And my son is so in love with being around his grandparents now, because for a long time they were the only other people besides mom and dad that existed
in the world.
Yeah, exactly. And so he's still, they're still his favorite people in the world, and everyone else is at the next level down compared to, which I think is typical, but like, I loved my grandparents too, but the look on my son's face when he sees his grandparents now is like unmatched, you know, so.
Oh, that's gotta be great for your parents.
Oh, yeah. And they deserve it too, because because of the pandemic, they were, they wanted to give us the break they knew we wanted and needed. And so they did a little more of what you might consider parenting rather than grandparenting. We try not to lean on them now for like, oh, hey, we want to, like just calling up at a moment's notice. Hey, can you watch our, you know, or whatever. Oh, I have a work call. Can you watch? We try not to do that thing. They're also in Virginia, so it's hard for us to do that kind of thing. But for a couple of those trips, visits, they did do that kind of thing. And so they deserve to be loved as much by my son as they now are.
That's great. That's great.
So,
that's really
yeah.
Great. Anything else you wanted to talk about?
I'm glad y'all are doing this. Like I said, I'm the history guy. Mm-hmm. And I can remember thinking, I still think about this a lot too, that I wish we had more firsthand accounts from 1918, 1919. Okay. And I hope that stuff like this will be the thing that for the next one, mm-hmm. People hearing what it was like for us will make people realize how they can get through it, mm-hmm. and some of the pitfalls, mm-hmm. you know, of like, hey, if someone tells you this is how you prevent this from getting worse, do it now, because it does reach a point where you can't take it back and it's off and running, you know? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's good that y'all are doing this.
Yeah. And if you know of anybody whose story would be good.
Yeah.
Valuable.
Yeah.
Point them in this direction.
Yeah. Have you, the one thing I would think of, have you talked to any of the business owners?
Not yet.
Okay.
So that's a great idea, though, to do some outreach. Is there anybody in particular you
well,
think
would
be good?
Well, I'm having lunch with Missy Julian Fox on Friday.
Missy.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. But I will. She's more plugged into the business owner community than I am. And so maybe she could get some more people. She was our host for our first event that we did.
Cool.
And she was fantastic in getting the business owners that I didn't know plugged in.
Yeah.
And I would just love to have recorded what it was like to own a restaurant at a time where we were told not to go inside, you know. And I think those voices need to be recorded.
Uh-huh.
And then I also hope, I'll think of if I know anybody, but I also hope that we learned the health disparities that already existed in the world before the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just made it more obvious and more glaring, or COVID made it more glaring.
Mm-hmm.
So I think to talk to someone who wasn't, like I said, we were very fortunate. I was able to work from home during the entire thing. Megan was a teacher, and so she had to go back, but she was still, had she gotten sick, her father-in-law is a doctor, you know, so
mm-hmm.
like, had we gotten sick, we still probably would have been okay. But I've really felt for a lot of the people that, and I now, it helps me understand a lot more how fortunate we were and how many people weren't so fortunate, you know? And I would hope that we can record stuff like that so that then again, if anyone needs an example, too often I think, you know, the problems in the world, we don't believe that they're true until they affect us, you know?
Yeah.
It shouldn't be that way. So if you could hear a recording of someone saying, yeah, it would have been a choice between quitting my job to not get COVID or keep going to work to feed my family. I can't imagine what that was like. And I would, you know, want future generations to understand. Hopefully by the time they'd be listening to it, we've improved on that. But
mm-hmm.
just in case they need a reminder, then they should have it.
Yeah, totally.
So,
totally.
Yeah.